On this episode of Still Loading, this is the coolest apocalypse. Hello, everyone. My name is Josh, and welcome to this new episode of Still Loading. For this week's episode, it's the first episode actually outside of Mario Month. We're recording this a couple weeks in advance. So this week, I am covering the game Horizon Zero Dawn, and joining me is another Josh, my friend Josh over from the YouTube channel Firespins Gaming. How are you doing today, sir?
What's going on, Josh? Yeah, I'm Josh for I'm Josh Romano from Firespin Gaming. I'm on YouTube and Instagram, so hit those up.
I'll make sure to include some plug sections at the end for you. So don't worry, you'll get all those in. You can list them specifically.
All right, cool.
We are here to talk about Horizon Zero Dawn, and Horizon Zero Dawn is one of the newer games. I usually cover a lot of retro stuff on the channel, but my first question for you is, what made you want to do this game? Because this is one that you've been asking me about for a while to come on to do.
This is one of my favorite PS4 games. It's a different type of apocalyptic
yeah.
video game. you play as Aloy.
She's a badass.
She's
a fucking badass. She's so
cool.
She's
a very awesome female role model for females.
You're not wrong with that. But like, what I liked about her character the most is not they didn't. So I don't know if this is going to give me any flack, but of course everyone's offended by everything online.
They didn't push the female agenda on her.
No, exactly. I wouldn't call it, but I get what you're saying. It didn't feel forced. It wasn't just like, let me inject this for the sake of diversity. You know, it was like, no, this is who she is. It just, her character felt real. It felt very natural. I also love the fact of the world that they built, but we'll dive into that right now. So Horizon Zero Dawn was released in early 2017, right before the Switch, I believe, for the PS4 by Guerrilla Games, developed by Guerrilla Games. And this game was in development for actually quite a long time. I took a number of notes about it. They actually began planning Horizon Zero Dawn in 2010, right?
Wow, I graduated.
High school or?
High school, yeah.
Really? Oh, wow, I'm older than you. I feel old. So towards the end of Killzone 3 development is when they started it, right? However, at the same time, Enslaved Odyssey to the West came out around the same time, and the game featured a redhead female hero in a post-apocalyptic and natural world, and they fought machines. Since the ideas were so similar, they're like, we can't release this right now. We're basically going to seem like we're copying Enslaved Odyssey to the West. That's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
To think that it's been going on for that long. That's how long this idea has been. I don't know what the word is, but percolating, whatever the fuck, has been in their minds for at least 7 years prior to release, which is kind of crazy to think. They actually, when they went on to get ready for this game, they used Killzone Shadowfall, their first PS4 title, as kind of a testing ground for this to see how to use a new engine. And Shadowfall still looks great, like, years later. I mean, the gameplay is kind of uninspired, but, like, still looks fucking good, even though that's, one of the first PS4 titles, I think, right? I think it came out in 2013. That's just a little bit of background. I do have some other notes on, stuff with it, but So what is the first thing that stuck out to you about the game? Like, what made you, drew you to the game initially?
I saw what would the correct term be? The first 20 minutes of gameplay, I think it was E3 on TV.
And that's what got you into it?
Yeah. I remember they started it up and she was crawling around in the bushes and there was like a stampede of animals coming out and they were robots. And I was like, game's pretty tight. So I'm going to purchase that when it comes out. And wasn't this game delayed?
I don't know, actually. I feel it probably was, in all honesty, because
all I remember was I walked into GameStop and it said it was coming out like a week later. And I was like, oh yeah,
I guess I better get
it. I completely forgot about this game. I'm going to get it.
I'm excited for the sequel. Did you play the DLC for it?
The sequel?
No, no, not the there's
a for this one?
For Horizon. There's a DLC for this one. And
yeah,
a
the
sequel.
Frozen Wild. He's playing it right now.
Okay.
I beat the sequel.
Or the DLC, yeah.
The DLC, yeah.
No, I threw in the sequel talk first when I meant the DLC. That was my bad.
I didn't beat the DLC stuff until after we decided to do this podcast. I want to say, 6 months ago? And now we're finally doing it.
Well, when we decided to do it, I bought the DLC to beat it.
Yeah,
just
it was like $15.
Yeah,
well, I was like, wow, it's $15 and the game's been out this long.
I'm
still shocked.
See, I like DLC like this where it's not just, here's some cosmetic shit. It's actually full. It's a full new campaign, practically. It was like a 20-hour campaign or something like that.
It took a while.
So I guess the first thing to talk about that I want to like really dive into is the story. And spoiler alert for the whole show. I mean, I feel like people should know that by now, but I always like to warn people in case it's their first episode listening. We're going to be breaking down a lot of the story here. So Aloy is an outcast of the Nora tribe, and she is raised by another outcast named Rost. And for the first part of the game, you don't know why she's an outcast or why Rost is an outcast. I don't even know if you ever find out why Rost is an outcast. I feel like you do at some point.
I think you do, but in all honesty, I forget.
Yeah, I forget too. So you see Aloy from a very young age, and you see her trying to interact with other kids in the village, and and they clearly reject her, and all the other Nora tribesmen reject her.
The children don't reject her.
The adults do, yeah. And then there's that one douchebag blonde kid who starts throwing rocks at her later on.
Hits her in the head.
That's in that moment where he hits her in the head is the first time you get to see kind of like the choice system come in. And you can choose to either react with your heart, react with your head, or react with anger or your strength. Yep. So compassion, intelligence, or anger, I guess, is the best option, or the three options. Those dialogue options don't make a huge difference in terms of the gameplay, but it does change your dialogue options that depending like later on in the game. So if you choose more compassionate options, it'll give you different dialogue options the rest of the game. If you choose more anger options, it'll give you different dialogue options throughout the rest of the game. But for the most part, it doesn't change the overall experience of the game, which is cool because it kind of lets you mold Aloy to your type of character. And I'm a big softy, so I always went with the compassion route. Like I just put the rock down when I was replaying it this time, I went with the intelligent thing where I could choose to throw the rock at his hand and knock the rock out of it. Like, I could fuck you up if I want, but I'm not going to because I'm too smart for you. That's how I read that. And so Aloy determines that she wants to find out why she's an outcast. And Rost tells her, like, the tribe won't speak to you, but there could be a way. And she's like, what is it? I'll do anything. And she finds out about this thing called the Proving. And the Proving is a way for young Nora tribesmen to become warriors. And anyone can do it, outcasts included. And if she wins it, not only is she allowed back into the tribe, but she's also granted a boon. And a boon is something that the elders, which are all the elder matriarchs, are all able to, or they have to grant her a request, and her request was going to be, what is her origin? And that is the intro to the game. That sets it up because it immediately makes Aloy likable because she's fighting from the ground up. She's clawing her way back into society from something that she did not, like, she was forced into. She didn't ask for this. And it makes her immediately a likable character. And what I really liked... I thought it was interesting because you don't see it like at all in most media or video games is that the society she lives in was a matriarchal society. But I also like that they were like the outliers, and then like the Karja, another society later on, were a more stereotypical society of just a more masculine dominated one. So it was interesting because it created this dichotomy between the two, and it made the world feel so fleshed out and real. And it was really interesting to kind of see like the, it was almost Native American influence. I mean, granted, I know nothing of Native American culture, so I can't say.
I noticed
say
that too when you start playing it. And as you advance, the more society is more advanced as you go through the game.
Mm-hmm. So that's the intro to the story. That kind of sets everything up. So Aloy, once she gets to the Proving, though, the Nora is attacked.
Well, let me ask you a question.
Yes.
Before the Proving, doesn't she go into the old civilization's what they would call a temple, but it's a old military base, and finds the Echo before it?
The Focus, yeah.
The Focus, right. The Focus.
No, you're right, and that's a big thing, because they were... Actually, I have a note about that, too. So, the Focus is basically the HUD for the game. It's this thing that she puts on her... Yeah, it's a Bluetooth earpiece, pretty much. But, it's a Bluetooth to your brain. It's not, connected to anything. And it's not connected to, a phone or something like that. So, it lets her see kind of, all this data around her. She's able to analyze things. She's able to see weak spots on the machines. And they actually call attention to that during the training sequence with her and Rost. That is a good point, because before the proving, she gets that Focus, and it helps her out a lot. And what I think is cool is that, when she gets the Focus, you can listen to audio logs, so you can kind of hear what happened to the world 1,000 years ago before it all went down.
And that's
down.
What makes the game more interesting.
It builds
your imagination up of what actually happened, and then you start to see video of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it really puts it in, and it's a great story the way it's written. And that's why I'm addicted to it.
And the thing is, I want to do an episode about this at some point. I want to talk about, because this game is a good example of marrying the two ideologies together. But what's more important to you in a game? Is it gameplay or is it story?
Story.
For you, it's story. For me, it's gameplay. But this game marries it both perfectly, because the gameplay is fantastic and it feels unique and inventive, even though it's kind of more. The whole idea of the skill tree thing is kind of a very generic thing now, because there's a lot of open world games that do that, where the action open world game has three skill trees and you have to get abilities in each of them and you gain experience. So there's some RPG elements. But in this game, because of what you were fighting, instead of fighting other humans for once, you were fighting different machines, and because of that, you're able to, instead of just let's put a guy in a bomb suit and make that the more difficult thing, it's here's a saber-toothed tiger, here is a fucking
T-Rex
thing. It's great.
And what's cool is every machine has its own, arrow and weakness, and you have to adapt to that.
One of my favorite ones to fight are the flame bellies, I forgot what exactly they're called, but it's a giant flamethrower things that have the big gasoline stomachs.
It looks like a giant armadillo.
Yeah, exactly. They have those long snouts and everything.
Yep.
Those were super fun to fight, but every machine made it was super interesting. But no, so what I was going to say was, when you're talking about the Focus, was that they actually originally didn't want Aloy to get the Focus until... it was close to to the proving, till after she finished the proving. Let me flip through the notes just to make sure where I have this correctly. Yeah. So they didn't want Aloy to get her Focus until after the proving. And then the developers are so are we just not going to have a HUD for the first 3 hours of the game? Cause the proving takes a couple hours to get to. So will you not see anything? Will you not see you see your health bar? Will you not see your ammo? Will you not see all this other stuff? So they kind of switched it up to have Aloy get it at a young age. And I think it actually worked for the benefit of the story.
It does, because for one, when she goes down there and Ross catches her, she gets a load of shit because of it. Mm-hmm. And she's told that she's not allowed to go in there. Well, I don't know. How old was she at that part?
Probably
10, 12.
I would even say younger.
Yeah, good luck.
I will say it did seem kind of odd that, because Ross seemed to control every element of her life, but for some reason with that one, he just couldn't get the Focus away from her. I thought that was a little, in terms of storytelling, it's a little weak, but at the same time, it's so early on in the game that it's whatever. It's for story reasons. I get it.
Yep.
And it doesn't really affect the outcome overall.
No.
So this was actually Guerrilla's first non-linear game, because they had only made Killzone games leading up to this. So there was all linear first-person shooters. And because of that, they wanted to kind of get someone who was more experienced with non-linear gameplay. So they hired this dude named David Frost. He was the quest designer for the game. But he's also, or maybe was it David Frost or David Forrest? I can't even read my own fucking notes. David Ford, maybe. You know what? I feel dumb now. But he was the lead quest designer for EverQuest, DC Online Universe, and Elder Scrolls Online.
Elder Scrolls, huh?
So he did all the quest chains for all of those. So they brought him in order to help them design the quests and just make it a little bit more fluid. And it honestly paid off, because I thought overall the quest structure of the game felt really natural. And they even describe it as a pyramid. Like, essentially, the most important stuff are at the bottom of the pyramid. It's an upside-down pyramid. So you do your main quest down at the bottom, and as the game goes on, it expands out. It kind of fleshes out the world.
What's funny is when you first get through that last gate and the world starts to get bigger, you start moving out and around in the map, and you're like, oh, this world ain't that big. And it kind of disappoints you at first, but then you realize, oh, this world's pretty big.
I would even say that, like, I would agree the world isn't as big as other open world games, but I don't think that's even a bad thing. It's still huge.
It takes time to get to where you need to go.
And on, well, even it takes not as much time as you would think, but it does take time. What I like about it, there's actually shit to do in it.
Yep.
Like, when you go play other open world games, it's great, it's big, it's open, but there's nothing in the world. This feels so, like, there's so much to explore. There's so many places you can go. Like, every place feels so perfectly crafted. It's wild.
Like, and I don't feel like I'm doing the same thing every 5 seconds.
Exactly. Yep. And even, like, they kind of have the same mentality that a lot of, Ubisoft open world games, like Assassin's Creed, how you have the big towers and you have
to... I was just going to say that.
But the towers in this, I will say, granted, I haven't played a lot, I haven't played Assassin's Creed at all recently, but the towers in this, I think, are pretty interesting because they're moving. You have to find ways to get on top of them, and each and one is a little bit different.
They're all different.
And then even so, like, to get down, Aloy repels off of it in this, like, badass, like, cinematic-looking thing.
It's really badass, actually.
It's great. Eric's dying a lot. No, he's just stuck on a wall.
He's having a hard time. Think Assassin's Creed, Eric. He was literally going up that when you said Assassin's Creed, so that's why I was like, oh, yeah.
God, this game still looks good. Yeah, we're watching our friend Eric play this right now, and this game still looks good even for like 3 years later.
Absolutely.
It looks stunning. Oh, he dead.
It's okay. You know, you're playing my story. That's cool. Just keep killing me. No, you can keep going. Don't worry about it.
Well, let me see if there's any other notes real quick that I can use to...
I wish you weren't stuck in this building and you can actually see the world outside. It's pretty fantastic. The graphics... in the beginning, you don't see anything, but once you get to that one shot where she can see the mountains and everything, my jaw hit the floor.
Because
I just got my PS4 Pro and a 4K TV, and I was just like, holy shit.
See, I played it on, I don't have a Pro, but I do have a 4K TV. I just, obviously, the regular doesn't do anything with the 4K, but it still looks good even on just regular 1080p.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
It's just a stunning looking game.
There's not much of a difference, but there is a difference.
I'm noticing it a little bit on yours, like just the details in the back, in the background.
The shadowing is a big.
It looks stunning. Yeah. So the story continues once Aloy completes the proving. I cannot speak for shit today. The Nora gets attacked by people you don't know who they are. You find out later they're pretty much a demonic cult.
Yep.
And I forget what the name of the cult is. Off the Shadow? I think.
The Sun Shadow?
The
Shadow Sun?
Something like that. Hold on. Let me see here.
It's the people you fight at the end, right?
Yeah. They're like the
spoiler.
I already told them. they're good. We already told them. But they worship something called Hades, and you find out later what Hades is. But they are, oh my god, why can I not find the stupid name of the group that's doing this? So the cultists attack all the Nora, and they take out that douchebag kid, which is one of the few times that I was actually one of the few people
very
I was happy
to see
that. I was like, I'm glad he's gone, this little prick. So Aloy takes out a bunch of them, and then the leader of the cultists chokeholds her and practically knocks her out. Ross saves her, and in the process
dies.
I
felt bad.
I watched the replay of that moment because I didn't get up to the proving just yet in my replay recently. I still get emotional watching that. It is so sad watching Ross
Did you ever go back and visit his grave?
I don't think so. You can.
Yes. And she talks about, like, it's no matter when you go, whatever you have done to progress in a story, she will talk about it.
Really?
Yes.
That's really cool.
And it gets you choked up a little bit.
It's so good. such a fucking
any
good game.
Any video game that can turn into a movie on its own is a good enough game for me. So this could definitely have a blockbuster movie. The Last of Us. I don't know if you ever
they're working
that.
On the TV series now.
Are they really?
They're doing a TV series.
HBO or
HBO?
Of course, I ended my subscription as soon as Game of Thrones ended, but that's okay.
HBO and Neil Druckmann, the actual writer of The Last of Us game, are they teaming up to do
the
series? Yeah.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
I'm surprised you haven't seen it. Yeah, it'll be cool. Once Last of Us 2 comes out, that's when they're going to go full steam into production, unless, you know, the coronavirus stops them. But we'll see what happens. But yeah,
COVID-19.
They're doing The Last of Us, and it makes sense for the show too, because The Last of Us is such a the characters are so deep in that, it's hard to. I honestly think that games work best would work if you're going to translate a game into a filmed medium, whether it's a movie or whatever. It almost has to be a TV show, because you can't get with a movie, it's so hard to translate the emotional connection that a player gets to a character or gets to a game in a movie, because a player will spend 30-40 hours playing through a game, and that builds that emotional connection. And a TV movie or a movie, excuse me, is hour and a half to 2 hours.
There's only one issue with that in Horizon. Everything would have to be CGI, and that would be one heck of an expensive TV show.
Yes, it would. Well, I mean, TV shows are now getting huge ass budgets too. Yeah. So I could picture them doing it. It just really depends on how. I mean, they would have to do a lot of CG for the
Game of Thrones, the TV show that was making so much money. I believe, and anyone can correct me if I'm wrong, they killed off some of the dragons early on, spoiler, because it was costing them too much
to CGI
them into the show.
I could see that.
It was expensive just to have a dragon flying.
Just go practical.
That's why most of the time you just saw the dragons sleeping or sitting, because making them actually fly costs so much money. That is an alligator beast. Good luck.
People listening are going to be so confused.
Once again, Eric is playing Horizon Zero Dawn right behind Josh. So I'm watching the TV and talking to Josh at the same time.
Shoot its belly, I think.
So,
I think Horizon would make an excellent TV show. It really would, especially with how rich the world building is. You could totally really expand that into a full TV show and make that super interesting. I think that would be fascinating. The only thing is that they would have to come up with a new plot twist, because anyone who plays the games would immediately know how the first season's going to end.
Absolutely.
So it could do something where maybe they had it take place before.
It doesn't even have to technically have Aloy. It could be all about
the world before Aloy.
Yeah,
or the world
of Ross.
Yeah, of Ross. It could be all that, too. That would be fucking cool.
Yeah.
So
why he's an outcast.
So Aloy gets out. So Aloy leaves the Nora tribe basically to find out why these cultists attack the Nora and to avenge Rost to an extent. And I'm going to kind of pare it down a lot because I don't remember all the specifics. Maybe you'll remember some more of the specifics. But she goes out and explores, and she meets two other different types of tribes, the Oseram, which are kind of more of a tinker, machine based. They really like to tinker with machines a lot. And then the Karja, which the Karja are the rich ass people.
are the Karja the ones that with the sun?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
The Karja, they have this. Their city is amazing looking.
Yeah,
it's huge. It's stunning.
It's the city of gold.
Yeah, it looks like El Dorado. And she finds out about. She discovers about what the cultists are, that they worship this thing called Hades, and she kind of sees it in person, where this machine kind of gets reanimated by this red spirit something. And all of a sudden it starts acting erratic and aggressive and hostile and things like that. And it kind of makes you a little curious, what is this exactly? And as she continues to explore the world, you find different facilities, and it's clearly these are facilities that we would see now in military bases and shit like that, but they're all overrun with moss and rocks and they've just been overrun by nature. And she slowly discovers that this world was once these weren't gods. These were not just supernatural beings. They were humans like them. And yep. she slowly realizes that there's something more to this.
So do you remember the first part when you clear the one part of the mountain? You just leave the Nora tribe. You go through a little bit of a valley, and then you hit the first city.
Vaguely, yeah.
It's the first time you see a tall neck.
Okay, yeah.
And you're like, what in the hell is that thing moving? And that's when you start to realize, oh, like, this isn't an alternate reality. This is an apocalyptic.
This is our reality. Event. This yes. is like, this is.
You
this
see
is...
cars, you see microwaves, you see, you know, everything just piled up and just.
What I love about the, when you first see a long neck is that just the scale of it.
Yes.
Like, it feels so huge. I also love the fact that they're gentle giants.
Yep.
I find, like, they don't make any noise, but for some reason, the animation for their walk says everything about the character of the machine. It's this yep. very graceful, yep. gentle machine, and you just feel like...
Well, don't worry. Some of the graceful ones that you would think, you fuck with it, it'll hurt you.
which ones are you thinking of?
You know, Wait, the...
Let's dive in the machines. We'll finish the story at the end, but actually... Before we talk machines, a good way to lead into that, the reason why there are machines, since we were talking about the story, Aloy finds out the reason why there are machines on the planet and they're like self-sufficient is that essentially the world was dying, so they ended up creating these like machines to help the world, and they all went rogue.
Yep.
And so they created this thing called Zero, they created this Project Zero Dawn, the scientists, hence the name Horizon Zero Dawn, and it was meant to kind of reel the machines back in, mm-hmm. for lack of a better term. It's a little bit more complicated than that, but it's a lot of cutscenes that you'd have to explain in order to go over.
Play the game.
it's so interesting. But so the machines that are there now are essentially there to kind of take care of the planet. They're supposed to be self-sufficient. They're supposed to be able to ingest biomatter in order to remain self-sufficient. Yep. And they go crazy because the biomatter they start to ingest is humans.
Yes.
And so they create this AI called Gaia, and she has a bunch of different protocols that are all named after other like Greek or Roman gods, like Apollo. Yep. I forget all the other names. Venus might have been one, but
Hades.
And Hades is one, hence the leader of the cult god. So you can kind of connect the two there. And so they have these machine plants that just keep manufacturing these machines to kind of keep the earth in check, you know, like kind of essentially repopulate the earth, but through machines. It's really to cultivate the earth. It's almost a bio terraforming type of thing.
And what's cool is those machine plants he's talking about, there's a plant per every machine,
mm-hmm.
and each one is different, so it's not like you're doing the same thing.
You get to
like
explore all those plants.
You get to explore them all, and you actually, doesn't it benefit you after you complete it on how to, like, can't you kill it easier? I forget.
Yes, you have, I think you gain a bonus to them, or it tells you a way to, you can tame them.
Yes, you can tame them. So you can actually make the machine your friend. I remember doing that because I did it with the T-Rex one, and it just
goes
hilarious.
And fucks everything up.
Yeah, it just fucking destroyed everything.
My favorite one is when you get the Striders and you can ride them. Then.
Yes.
Yep. That was really cool. So I wanted to say all that so we could actually talk about the different machines that you fight and that you encounter. There's a bunch of different, there's Watchers, there's Striders, yep. there's Tall Necks, which are like the big gentle giants. They look like giraffes combined with like Brachiosaurus or something like that.
The Tall Neck, the one time I felt bad for it, remember the Corrupt one?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I was getting all choked up. I was like, how can you do that to
such a beautiful
giant?
Right? it's like elephant hunters or something like that, like endangered elephant hunters.
The best way I can describe a tall neck, it's a giraffe with a space, a flying saucer for a head.
Yes.
That is a tall neck.
And it's so pretty looking. I don't know why. It just looks stunning to me. So there's Watchers, there's Tall Necks, there's oh my gosh, what is it? It's I want to say they look like Sabretooths, but they're not. It's
I know what one you're talking about.
They Scrappers. That's what I was trying to say. Scrappers.
Yes.
So each one is kind of based off of either another animal or a dinosaur or something like that. Like Watchers clearly look like Velociraptors to me. Would you agree with that?
Yes. Yep, that's exactly what they are.
Tiny little things. They are much less deadly than Velociraptors. They just kind of alert all the other machines around them. That's pretty. They're more like aggressive alarms.
Yeah. Well, Gaia, the artificial intelligence, probably went into like the old encyclopedia and, you know, looked up what old creatures look like and went off of that.
Those guys, their weak point is right in the eye. If you can nail them,
one shot, one kill.
Than anything, they are one of the hardest ones to kill in one shot because the eye is so small. But when you do, once you master that, you feel so fucking cool because you can. Especially once you get it where you can.
Well, you got a split second because as soon as that thing sees you, it's go time. It's running at you. Like you're done at that point. You better get your spear out because that's the only way you're killing it.
Those are even fun. That one of the other cool mechanics is that if you kind of wear down an enemy enough, if you do enough damage and it becomes kind of stunned, for lack of a better term, and it falls down and you can put a killing blow into it and it deals like a shitload of damage. Doesn't always kill it depending on how much damage is done, but it does a shitload of damage to it, whatever it may be. There is scrappers, which they kind of have like saw blades and they kind of tear up.
The one I was going to tell you about. Like it's a gentle looking creature, but if you piss it off, you got razor blades coming at you.
Well, generally aren't those things, they attack you even if you aren't attacking them. Like they're very territorial.
If
you walk into their territory, they're going to be like, the fuck? And they just charge at you.
Yeah. And it hurts.
There's snap maws, I think, which are the crocodiles.
Yep, they're the crocodile.
Eric was fighting for a little bit.
Yes, yep. Those are nasty. They're actually hard to kill.
They're very hard to kill. They're probably my least favorite to fight just because they take so much to kill.
And then you got the armadillo sack things.
Yeah, they shoot venom. They shoot fire. They also shoot like ice. Poison, corrosive stuff and ice at you. And
basically, wherever you are in the game, the creature is set up to that biome. So if you're like, I believe in what's the DLC called again,
Frozen Wilds,
right? Everything is basically ice or fire.
Yeah, the Frozen Wilds.
So yeah, basically downloading that DLC was a completely new game because everything, you forget what you already knew, you know, because it was completely different.
In that DLC, they expanded a little bit onto the Hades storyline, if I remember correctly. I think there's just a little bit.
Well, you find a whole new artificial intelligence. I don't believe that was Gaia, was it?
No, you're right. I don't think it was Gaia. Yeah. What is cool about the Frozen Wilds, there is another tribe of people that are kind of like, they seem like the Nora, but they're just split off, called the Banuk tribe.
Yep.
And they're kind of like the all natural type of people. They believe like the holistics.
Yeah.
They live off the land. They want to
the hippies.
Pretty much. They want to be in Congress with the machines.
And yes.
To their credit, they are able to kind
do
of
just tame, that.
Do just yes. that. They kind of live with the machines and they tame them. And they don't have what Aloy has, all the the focus and also the ability to the upgrade on Aloy's staff that allows her to tame animals and whatnot.
Well, speaking of the Banuk, you find Banuk artifacts throughout the gameplay through the regular campaign, and you don't know what any of it is. And then with the DLC, you finally realize who the Banuks are. Because remember those little tiny wooden machine statues you would find, and you'd scale up the side of the mountain and all that? It's all Banuk stuff.
And it's cool because they took kind of like the fourth, I guess, tribe of people, because there's the Karja, the Nora, and the Oseram, and the Banuk are kind of like off to the side. Like you don't deal with them all that often in the core game, but in the DLC they expand on them and they show that they have tribal warfare and like how they're much more divided than the other groups of people. I don't want to say races because they're all pretty white, but they're like the other like nations, I guess, is a lack of a better term. They're very divided.
Canadians.
They live up north. I'm sure the guy who actually runs my podcast network, he's Canadian, so like I'm sure he'll like that. Hey, how you doing there, TJ? So there's so many different types of enemies, and I think what makes the gameplay so endlessly replayable is that there's always a different way to approach even a fight that you've done 1,000 times. Like even just the fucking Watchers, which are stupid easy to take out now, they are still so satisfying. And the stealth mechanic in the game, which we haven't even talked about yet, makes approaching each fight so different, because you can either go balls to the wall and just like fucking rail into them, or you could hide in the tall grass, which I love, but I always found it funny that they're conveniently all red tipped. Like all the grass has red tips on them.
Yeah.
Just like Aloy's hair. I'm like, well, no wonder nothing can spot her, because it matches her hair. It's like, why is all the stealth grass red? I don't know, but yeah. I understand for the game, it's a visual cue for the player, but still I found that kind of funny. What are some of your favorite elements of combat? Like, is it the enemies, or is it, we haven't even broken down the skill trees just yet, which I'm not going to go skill by skill, but you get the idea. Like, what are some of your favorite elements of combat?
The bow. Yeah. The bow. It's the main thing. I believe I went through the whole game without using the, and don't laugh at me when I tell you this, without using the staff, because I didn't realize that that was an option.
The bow is your favorite element of combat. What specifically about it makes you enjoy it so much?
It's the fact that there's different types of bows and different arrows per bow.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to know which one to use for the individual creature that you are going to kill.
One of my favorite types of arrows you can use are the flame arrows. It takes forever, but if you get a light an enemy on fire, it's one of the most satisfying things for some reason to me.
Yep, because it's like extra points for killing it, because it's still burning it.
And then you can shoot it in the sensitive areas.
Yep. The most satisfying thing, though, is when you unlock that final bow and it's got like those extra super strength arrows. Mm-hmm. I forget what they're called. The armor piercing ones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's just like a one shot. You're dead.
I also love that you can, like, there's so many different mechanics in this game. So we've talked about the combat mechanics, how you have different weapons. We spoke about the bow specifically, but even just the bow has a bunch of different types of arrows and ammo that you can use. But you also get things like slingshots, which you can use.
Never used them.
Those are nice. If you're trying to light something on fire or freeze something more quickly, that's your go-to.
Well, isn't there tripwires too?
Tripwires are also really cool.
Yeah.
If you can set like, so if I was particularly struggling with a situation, I would just lay tripwires everywhere and have them just run through it. And it was so funny to watch, because you could eventually like bait them in. They would get tripped up by it. You'd stab them, run away. They would run into the next tripwire. They would get stunned again, stab them, and you just keep rinse washing.
That is one thing I don't like about the game. Is the fact that you can watch the trails of where the creatures walk, and walk the same pattern.
Yeah, it is a little... Well, but at least, though, with this, it kind of makes sense, because they are machines, so they can be... Like, it's not like it's a human where humans will be like, why the fuck would they walk the same pattern? But with machines, it kind of makes a little bit more sense, because they're just programmed to do that. Yeah. It is kind of odd that no one's necessarily going out and programming them anymore. It's all just automated. But I also, it makes it a little bit more believable, at least I think about it.
But I mean, you can literally sit in a bush, wait for it to come around its path again, and then that's when you corrupt it.
Yeah.
And take it over. Which is always satisfying, though, because, you know.
You just get an army of them.
Yes.
My one friend, I was watching him play. What are the... I cannot remember the name of them. They're the biggest ones that you fight. They're the biggest ones that you actually fight. It's like they look like T-Rexes practically. Do you know what I'm talking about? I can't remember what the machine type
is. It's on the cover, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember the machine type by any chance?
No.
Okay.
Well, it will screw you up, though.
Well, my friend corrupted one of them. He like turned one of them to his side, and there was two of them in the area. So he just sat back and watched these two giant machines just go at it. Meanwhile, all these little watchers are like jumping up trying to get
when
at
he
each other.
Did that. Did he do that towards the north of the Sun City?
I hadn't even played the game at the time when I was watching him do it. So that's what got me to actually buy the game. When I saw him doing that, I'm like, holy fuck, this is cool.
Yeah, I believe there's only like one or two spots in the entire game where those are actually herded together.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a bunch of them next to each other. But when you can actually shoot the auto cannons off of it and pick it up
and
use it to kill the other ones. That's the cool
thing. Like, you can, they actually encourage you to pick different spots, because if you, specifically on like the deer looking machines, they have canisters on the back that are flammable. And if you shoot them off, you can collect them all. If you don't shoot them off, there's less of a chance of you picking them up, because
and that also helps create ammo for your bow.
Fire arrows.
And with the arrows and stuff, it's not like you can pick your arrow back up. You actually have to go break twigs and craft your arrows. And it's funny because, like, you don't realize until towards the end of the game how many metal shards you actually go through making arrows. Mm-hmm. And then you realize, oh, shit, I have none left.
You really have to be. It's the game forces you to be economical with everything. You have to really pay attention to what you've been given. And then kind of dissect, not even dissect it, but like, you have to pay attention to what you've been given and then pick and choose what your strategy is going to be. Like, once I found myself using a lot of fire arrows, I had to go hunt a lot more animals that, or a lot more machines that had stuff like that.
Yeah, the canisters on
the
them.
The canisters on them. Yeah. I forget what the canisters are called now for the life of me, because it's not like fire.
They're
gas
blazing.
Blaze.
Yeah.
Blaze canisters.
It's all starting to come back to me. I probably should have played the game before.
Well,
he came over.
I mean, I did play a little bit, like I said, and I know. I thought you said you did play a little bit.
I did, but it was like 2 months ago when we decided we were going to do this.
Actually,
probably more like a year ago. That was too many games.
Yeah, it was.
It was actually before too.
It was before too many games, because we were scheduled, and then something came up. I think work dicked you over.
Yeah,
and then,
it did.
And then you had to take care of that. But yeah, so. That's pretty much all. Any other things you want to talk about in terms of the combat or the gameplay like that?
Not necessarily. No.
No. What's something else? Like, what's something else about the game that we haven't talked about that you've wanted to dive into? Because I always have a tendency to just kind of be like, "Here's my points. I want to see is there anything off the top of your head that you can think of that like we haven't said anything yet?
Character development.
Okay. What do you got?
For Aloy.
What do you got?
I mean, you basically watch a little human turn into more of an adult person. She has her ignorance in the beginning starts to mature, so anybody can actually relate to her character just off of that.
I you know what, I never thought of that. I agree 100%, because she's very naive of the world at first, and then she very quickly learns how awful people can be.
Yes.
But what I like about her is that she kind of has this like cautious optimism about everybody. It's not necessarily like, oh, everyone's awful, so fuck everybody. It's more just like, all right, if they're a dick, that's just humanity. But at the same time, like, I'm not going to assume they're a dick, but I'll be cautious until they prove me otherwise.
There's another thing to this. Like, a lot of games, it's no different than watching a movie. You can predict what the outcome is going to be. In this game, you couldn't predict it.
No, I didn't.
It hits you with such. Can I swear?
Yeah, dude, I've been swearing the whole time.
It hits you with like a fucking fist to the face towards the end when you find out what's actually like going on and who Aloy actually is. It's like, whoa.
What? Yeah, I guess perfect segue then. Spoiler alert, once again, you find out Aloy's origin in this game. What I love about this game is that it's a complete story. They don't set up some bullshit like cliffhanger just for the sequel. They're like, no, let's tell a complete story. If we have something more, they still set up something for the ending, but they give you they ask a question in the beginning of the game and they answer it by the end of the game.
Yep.
And the way they answer it is that you find out Aloy's origin. You find out that the woman who was the head of the Horizon Zero Dawn project that saved the Earth from the machines that we mentioned before, her name was Elizabeth Sobeck.
Yep.
And you find out that once shit went haywire after Elizabeth died and Gaia was trying to take over everything, shit went south because there was an unknown signal that kind of caused Gaia to go haywire. And that's what caused Hades, her other program, to kind of lose his shit and start corrupting machines and also like corrupting humanity.
Yeah,
and
Hades was the one that was supposed to just bring balance, wasn't he?
He was the one supposed to bring balance in case that the AI went rampant.
Yeah, he was to destroy everything. He was supposed to destroy everything. And then it would start back over.
Exactly.
Again.
But he went rampant instead.
Yeah.
And it caused all the issues. And so Gaia clones Elizabeth. Using Elizabeth's DNA, she makes a clone of her, and you find out that's Aloy. And yes. And Aloy comes out of this this facility, and that's where the Nora find her.
Yep.
And one of the Nora matriarchs are like, oh my gosh, this is a gift from
it's the chosen one.
It's a chosen one. Yep. And the other two matriarchs like, spawn of Satan.
Yeah, and said, that's why she became an outcast.
That's why she became an outcast.
She was not so born within the tribe.
Exactly. And you find out why she's an outcast. You find out where she comes from. You find out who her mother is, which remember the cutscene at the end where she sees Elizabeth's body?
Takes her armor from her, yeah.
Uh-huh.
That was like, whoa.
That was intense. And like
she sits down and's talking to it. It's like you're talking to a corpse.
That's over 1,000 years old, yeah. Over like a couple hundred years old at this point.
And I love how her bones inside the helmet are like perfectly preserved.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess it was like a type, it was embalmed inside there. I have no idea.
But once you get that armor and you put that armor on, it's like that silk cloaking looking. She's wearing it right now.
It's fucking awesome.
It's so badass. And I love the different outfits you can pick.
I will say the headpieces don't always look great.
Like that one right there.
I like that headpiece. I've seen worse.
When he gets done with this level, I'll show you my favorite outfit for Aloy to wear.
She looks like a Russian. He does. Well, I think he's Oseram. I think it's an Oseram character. And all that, they did a good job, and just kind of thinking of that, they did a good job of like visually telling you, this is Carja, this is Nora, and it's usually...
You can tell from the outfits that they're wearing.
It's the outfits, because like what he's wearing is very brown, and like light brown, and like kind of very earthy colors. The Carja are very like red and more flamboyant. Yep. They're very loud. And the Nora are kind of a combo. Blue, they wear, it's a lot of blue
beads.
And very blue,
very
greens.
Native American.
Yeah. They do a good job of visually distinguishing between the different types of tribes and types of groups.
I'm just
of
trying to figure out, it's supposed to be set in the United States.
I think someone said Colorado, or maybe that's Last of Us.
I don't know. I'm trying to figure out where, you know, like the Middle East vibe comes into it, because you know what I mean. You got like
the Carja kind of Middle East feel to it.
You go from Alaska to, you know, the desert plains to the Middle East, and the Amazon.
It's all
like
over the place. I mean, like I feel like they just have to condense it down to it. I mean,
I'm still waiting to find that perfect video game that plots North America perfectly.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean, I guess if you could think about it, Colorado might make sense because you have high snowy mountains in the Rockies. Then the Nevada deserts are pretty close by to that too.
That's true.
And then I don't know about jungle, but it could
there's no jungle.
There's no jungle in the Rockies. Are you sure?
I mean, that was deep Amazonian jungle, my man.
Didn't John Denver sing about that? Colorado, Rocky Mountain? No.
I've been to Colorado. It's very nice.
I've always wanted to go. I actually had a friend moved out there like years ago, and he was a Broncos fan, so it worked out for him well.
Well, it's not working out for him right now.
No. Well, he's not out there anymore. But
coronavirus.
Yeah, right. But you're right though, with character development, that is something that's like super interesting because it's very easy to like Aloy, like I mentioned in the beginning of the episode. And the fact that she kind of learns from the world and it's not just this static character, it makes her 10 times more interesting than most other characters that I've played as.
Yeah, I mean, from the moment you put this game in, it hits you. And it's pretty cool. It's a good game. If you guys haven't played it, you should really try it out.
Definitely try it out. So we've talked about the story a lot. We've given the ending of it already. We've talked about the gameplay. We've talked about the world building. The music is always something I always find a hard time in any game to really describe. Like, I always feel weird. I always say, oh, it's good, and I don't really know how to describe it. I would really need to find someone who is a legit musician to be able to be like, give them the soundtrack and be like, describe this for me in smart words because I'm dumb or something. Because I can never find a way to like really talk about it. But the soundtrack's excellent. Like it's good in the sense that it fits the game. It's not memorable because there's no strong melodies, but all the music always kind of, it fits the mood and the story and it always has these great, it crescendos at the right moments. I understand that's like, done purposely by the developers, you know, they put it in for those moments, but it always fits the mood that developers are trying to indicate or trying to express.
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess one other thing to talk about are the controls itself. I think the controls,
they're smooth.
They're very smooth.
They're very smooth.
They're very nice. I like the fact that when you have your crafting wheel to make your different ammo, it slows everything else down. Doesn't completely pause the game, but it slows it down, so that way it gives you enough time to think a little bit. Like I would use that even if I didn't need to craft weapons. I would use that as a way to slow down time for a second and be like, okay, what do I want to do? What do I want to do? Because pausing just felt like it would take all the emotion out of what was happening. But I would actually, but I would use the crafting wheel to slow it down instead of a full outright stop to kind of figure out my strategy, out what I'm going to do.
When I first put the game in, I was doing the whole just run and gun kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then once I got towards like the Carja area, that's when I started, you know, like, okay, maybe I should start doing it this way, doing it that way.
This was one of the first open world games since Far Cry 3. You ever play Far Cry 3?
Yes, I have.
Far Cry 3 has some of the most fun stealth segments in any game I've ever played. And this kind of reminded me of that, like, where you would see a base of enemies and you could figure out the perfect way to stealthily take them all out. And you do fight humans in this. You usually fight a lot of cultists, and you fight. They kind of have bases set up, and you have to take them out. But what's cool is that once you do take them out, then the Carja or just normal people take over that and kind of turn it into another village. Not quite as well populated as the big ones, but they do take over, and it makes the world feel so much more full. Because of course that would happen. They built this whole base up. People can just go here and set up a new village for free. Essentially,
yeah,
they get free houses.
Yeah.
And those bases were fun because it reminded me of Far Cry 3, where you would have a group of enemies and you have to find the alarm, take the alarm out first.
Yep.
And the alarms were cool because they're just these sacks of like liquids. You just stab your spear into it and it would just drain out the alarm. And if the alarm did get set off, it was pretty, it was actually semi-difficult.
You're talking about the hideouts.
Yeah, the hideouts.
Yeah, yeah.
Those were fun. Those were a lot of fun to do.
Yes. Cause yeah, it's no. You're exactly, you hit the nail on the head with the Far Cry 3 thing. You know, you gotta pick which one you're taking out first. Whether or not, you know, is there a creature there that's effective enough to corrupt on your side that could take everybody out that's in there.
Though I will say one thing that I like Far Cry 3 more than this, and it's a very minor thing. I actually like this game a lot more than Far Cry 3. But in Far Cry 3. The animals could just wander into the base camp,
usually one. There's a bear caged in the camp.
Can shoot the lock and just let the bear out.
Or a cougar.
I remember there was this one where it happened to me. Did it happen to me or happened to a buddy of mine? I walked into the base camp in Far Cry 3, and all of a sudden I just captured it. It's because a Jaguar came in and murdered the entire camp before I got there, and all of a sudden I just had it.
You played Far Cry 3, but have you played Far Cry 2?
No.
Far Cry 2.
A lot of people that
still
game
has
like
bad graphics, but it is more realistic than even the one that came out last year.
I don't like realism. I want to be fake.
It's not really the real. It's the weapon effects. So like when you get shot, it legit looks like a bullet hole, and you have to actually pry the bullet out, bandage yourself. If you don't, it will affect you. If you take an RPG and shoot it straight up in the air, it will come back down and hit you.
Oh, Jesus.
You know,
that's cool, though.
When you started a fire in the African desert in Far Cry 2, it would take out like 100 acres.
Holy shit.
Yeah, it was.
How big was the world in that game? Was it big by those standards?
I'm trying to remember. It was big, but they were mini map stages. So like you had this part of the world, then you would go into the next.
Okay. So they were kind of like hub stages almost.
Exactly. Yeah.
I tried out playing Far Cry 1 actually, and I hated it because the NPCs were so broken in the sense that they could be like 2 miles away and see you, and there's like five trees in between you and them, but they could still shoot through them.
Yes,
and you couldn't see them. And I remember playing that. I'm like, where is this guy shooting me? I can't find him. What the fuck? And I just gave up after that. I did play a little Far Cry 4, but anyway, so. A couple other tidbits before we wrap this up, unless there's any thing else that you wanted to say. The engine for Horizon Zero Dawn, this is just random tidbits, not necessarily any they're not really connected to anything we've talked about. But the engine for Horizon Zero Dawn was used as a reference for Death Stranding, Hideo Kojima's game.
Didn't play it.
I did not like it, what I played of it. Okay. I got it because I want AAA developers to do weird shit.
I just want the controller.
Yeah.
That came with the system pack.
What is it? Is it just a regular controller with a cool skin?
It's a pissed colored controller.
Yeah.
It's clear, you know, it's like got that 90s clear look, but it's piss. It's supposed to look like that baby sack that you're carrying.
Yeah. That's so weird.
Yeah.
No, I didn't like Death Stranding though. I got it for Christmas and I wanted it because I want to encourage AAA developers to do weird shit and not just stick to cookie cutter formula stuff. And this is weird. I didn't enjoy it, but I'm glad it exists in a weird sense. I'll have to do a whole episode on it. I couldn't get into it. I'll talk to you about it.
Yeah. Horizon Zero Dawn had a pretty big cult following when it came out, but I mean, not as big as Death Stranding.
When that game
came out, that was supposed to be the shit. I never got it, and a lot of people that were playing it said it sucked.
I agree, but I'll talk to you about it off mic, because like I would love to do an episode on it, because I want someone on it who really loved it, and then me who didn't like it. So that way I can shit all over
it. It's a debate.
It's a debate at that point. But last little tidbit, when this game was being developed, we talked about how great the story was. This is the first Guerrilla Games that they actually hired writers for, house writers for, because originally they would outsource the writing to the games to some other company.
Okay.
But they actually hired writers for this, and they hired John Gonzalez, who was the writer for Fallout New Vegas.
Oh, no kidding.
Mm-hmm.
So they got, you know, they got the guy from Skyrim. They got the guy from, no wonder the game's so good.
Yeah, they got a lot of grade A talent to help them with story, to help them with quest design. It really created a really, they got the, not the best, I don't know who the best of the best is, but they got the best in the business at least. They got top tier talent in the entirety from the business, and it worked out really well. So
I mean, look at the streetlights that are still up.
Right.
And it's cool because they're not, you know, they don't look like normal streetlights. They're all bent. You can tell they're rusting and falling apart, but the world in this game is just, it's amazing.
And it's cool because like right now
there's
the red grass. Like what we're looking at Eric playing is like, it totally looks like this was once part of a city, but now you can see the dilapidated structures, but overall it just looks like there's the traffic light.
And but they go into it like, to the pedestrian.
It's like a field of rocks.
Yeah, it's got the pedestrian crossing parts on it. It's just, there's a deteriorating car. The game is just, it's excellent. I mean, they did such a great job with this game.
It really did.
I mean, this game came out, what, 3 years ago?
3 years ago.
3 years ago. And a month ago, I do video game hunting and stuff on YouTube. I found the collector's edition, the big box. It's right up there behind you for $30. Goes for like $200. And the statue inside was brand new. It had the art book. The only thing it was missing was the steel book, which I'll eventually just get off
You'll
eBay
find
to complete.
Somewhere, yeah.
But I had to get the statue. It was one of those things where, you know, all right, I'll just buy the game. So once I fell in love with the game and I thought the game was just so great, it's like, shit. Why didn't I get the collector's edition?
Well, to be fair, it's like, I always find it a little pretentious when game developers create new IPs with giant-ass collector's editions. I'm like, we don't even know if your game's good yet.
Exactly.
Like, so I don't...
But the problem is, if you don't get the collector's edition when it comes out, you're paying an arm. Here's my arm.
I mean, if you think about it, though, the collector's edition was probably $150 retail anyway. So you really, if it's worth $200 afterwards, $50 markup.
Oh no,
is
I'm
not,
just talking about the statue itself.
The statue alone is $200.
Yes,
holy
the statue
shit.
Alone is
let alone
$200.
The box and everything else. Holy shit. But that's a good place to kind of leave this episode off. Any final words on the game? I feel like you actually just kind of did, but is there any other final things just to make
go
sure?
Go play it.
Yeah.
I mean, 100%. Eric hasn't put the controller down since we started this, and it's been an hour and 2 minutes.
I mean, well, maybe he's
and
bored,
I,
but...
I kind of got a feeling that he's going to take this game home with him after this podcast is over.
Well, for quarantine, I might have to.
Yeah. But. To wrap this up, Josh, anything you want to plug? You have a YouTube channel, Firespin Gaming.
Yeah.
Any social media and anything else you want to plug?
You can find me on Instagram and only Instagram. It's Firespin_gaming. I do a lot of posts on there. There is a link in that.
I'll make sure to include a link to your YouTube channel in the show notes.
Okay, perfect. My YouTube channel is mainly my main source. I'm currently at 1,170 subscribers. I do video game hunting, so I do live. I basically have a camera on me while I'm garage sailing and picking up video games for dirt cheap. I keep what I don't have, put it into my collection, which is around us right now in this room.
It's beautiful.
And
it puts mine to shame. It's
beautiful. And basically I trade or sell whatever is left over to recoup the money to continue to garage sale. So
it's a good business. I'm not going to lie.
It's a good side hustle.
It is. And he finds some good stuff, guys. I know you weren't able to pick this up. But the Neo Geo that you found, wasn't it complete in box too?
Or it was a complete in box Neo Geo with two joysticks. Eric's over there shaking his head because this was like, a slap to the face. I go to the guy's house.
The fact you were able to find it is just wild.
I know. I go to the guy's house and I ask him, this is only a 3-minute long story. There's a video on YouTube where I talk about it. It's a $4,900 Neo Geo lot. All right. So the guy goes, oh, I have some old video games. And he goes upstairs, comes down with the Neo Geo lot. Well, my jaw hit the floor. I had to get a floor jack to pick it up because it was just detached from my face. So we start going through the stuff. I'm pretty much adding up the games in my head, and I still can't believe it. I legit offered the guy $1,000 right there on the spot, and he knew what he had. Mm. And that's never a good thing because that means you're not getting it.
Yeah.
So basically, he said, all right, I'll let you know, but I was thinking more like $1,500. So by the end of that night, he had already gone on eBay and looked up the prices of everything. Oh, yeah. But the main reason why I knew I wasn't going to get this lot was because his father bought it for him when he was my age. Mm-hmm. And basically, he has the sentimental attachment to it.
Yeah.
But what really broke my heart was the wife came down with a box with like some manuals and a couple boxed NES games. And I'm like, oh my God, well, do you still have any more of these? And she goes, no, I threw them out last year. So somewhere in waste management in Panargel, if anyone wants to brave disease and infections, there are NES boxes in the landfill over there. So good luck.
So depressing. So yeah, check out his YouTube channel, Firespin Gaming. He finds a lot of great stuff. Found a copy of Earthbound. I forget, how much did you pay?
$250.
$2.50 for a $250 cart. Just let that sink in. So yeah, check out his YouTube channel. As usual, you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at StillLoadingPod on all of them. You can also email me, StillLoadingContact@gmail.com. Also, don't forget to check out the nonprofit I'm partnered with, the Bit by Bit Foundation. The Bit by Bit Foundation is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide video games for children receiving inpatient care at children's hospitals. You can check out their webpage at bitbybitfoundation.org and consider donating if you can. And as for the rest of my plugs, if you want to support the podcast, you can also support it by giving it a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or whichever podcasting app you use, or consider checking out the Patreon, patreon.com/stillloadingpod. Even just $1 a month will help me grow the show. And that should do it. Do you have anything else to say, Josh?
Sega!
Holy shit, I'm going to have to, that peaked so much.
End it with that.
And I will.
Because of your buddy.
But, all right, and that should do it. And I will see you all next time.
Sega!